bit of humour to start with, and I've got to remember to finish in 40 minutes. So about 4 to 2. My husband had just finished reading a new book entitled "You Can Be the Man of Your House." So he stormed into his wife in the kitchen and announced, "From now on, you need to know that I am the man in this house, and my word is law. You will prepare me a gourmet meal tonight, and when I'm finished eating my meal, you'll serve me a sumptuous dessert. After dinner, you're going to go upstairs with me, and I want to have a bath, and you'll draw the water for me so I can relax. You'll wash my back, towel me dry, put my robe, massage my feet and hands, and then tomorrow, guess who's going to do my hair?" His wife paused and said, "My first guess is the funeral director." Well, it was interesting that Steve chose the topic, a historic topic, the King James Bible, and full of skullduggery and politics behind that. And I've chosen a historic topic as well. And I just want to say at the beginning, a lot of this is going to be basic information. And then at the end, I'll summarize a big aha, at least in my mind, as to the result of why. The United Church does not have a pastor in the whole of Mexico. Everyone left. And a very good friend of mine, Mark Sapperton, who's a civil engineer, has business in Mexico, was down for Pentecost or Festival of Weeks. And he was able to speak to the brethren in Mexico. There were about, in the city of Mexico, about 45 people, 30 on the Sabbath and 45 the next day. 15 or so lived far away, so they traveled into one service. And it was very interesting to hear him repeat the stories and the reasons of why they remained with the United Church of God. It brings up a very interesting situation that I think gives us opportunity to learn from. When we look at the history of religion in the Western world, we see a definite pattern. And I'd like to share what that pattern is with you today. It first began in the Western world, which is South America and New Mexico. At that time, briefly to review, the story of the conquistadores came over, the Spanish people came over and began to dominate the area, both by rule and by religion and so forth. And in order to understand what really happens at the beginning of a mass movement like this, the title of the sermon is 3PM. 3PM. That's what happens when mass movements like this begin. Let me set the stage for a paradigm, if you will. A paradigm that I think is emerging in the United Church of God. And we're, at least I feel, becoming more sensitive to 3PM. I was reading a new magazine I've got called Christian History. It's a very, very good magazine. I've enjoyed it very much. And the latest issue is on people of faith. And it goes into look around what happened in America with religious migrations. As I mentioned earlier, the American founding was one based on a basic idea that the founders wanted us to have freedom of religion. Freedom of religion. And if we consider from the departure of Christianity from the primitive or early New Testament church in the first century AD, there has been a wrong religious paradigm. There's been a wrong religious paradigm, summarized by 3PM. I suppose you're all wondering what 3PM is. Thank you. 3PM. Even before, as I mentioned earlier, with the conquistadores coming into the South and New Mexico, they came with Franciscan missionaries, and they came across to the Pueblos, which is the Spanish for peoples, and began to stamp on them the culture of the Spanish, which was, of course, completely different to the culture of the indigenous peoples. The Spanish succeeded in winning in that battle, which took place for a very long time, and despite that stamping of authority based in trade and developing the Spanish empire, let us say, was carrying on religion to people and a system which was forced on the people. And what did that do? The people, in secret, kept their religious practices. And they had syncretism. They merged what is Catholicism today into pagan worship that they already had. You may want to think of the Lady of Guadalupe, if you will, as a mixture of Indian tradition and heritage with Christianity. Over time, though, through intermarriage, rape, concubinage, and between the two races mixing, a new race was created called mestizo, which is the Spanish for mixed. And both races and religion were mixed together. That began about the famous year in 1492, New South, the ocean blue, Christopher Columbus, and it began about that time. And the colonial expansion of trade and conversion to indigenous tribes people took place to Catholicism. Meanwhile, here in the Northeast, the paradigm of religion moved from England over to the New England coast. Now, we would always think of 1620 as being the time of the Pilgrim Fathers coming over. But in 1630, 10 years later, a gentleman called John Winthrop led a group of Reformed Puritans to the shore of what is today present-day Massachusetts. And his vision was, believe it or not, to build a city on a hill. Sound familiar? A shining city on a hill? That's exactly what he wanted to do. And he wanted to set an example for, of all things, the Church of England. Why the Church of England? Well, they weren't very good people. They were beset, the Winthrop group became beset by 3PM. They were full of inner and outer personal turmoil and theological battles among themselves. 3PM was alive and well back then. Eventually, out of that emerged what is called the Congregational Church today. And it emerged working hand in hand with the civic order of the local state, and it wanted to be biblically mandated that all the details of the law code in the civil state matched biblical law code as they saw it. In other words, you had a church state. And that was not acceptable, and a dissident, Roger Williams, would have none of it, and through too much control over everyone by the church caused him to flee to a place called Rhode Island. So 3PM is at work here, and once again, what happened? He preached against any church to dictate religious practices in all of its territory. See, we basically had taken the Church of England and brought it over to America and said this is the way we're going to do it. And it's going to be a church-state religion. And so he founded a church based on religious freedom in Rhode Island, and it became New England's first experiment in religious freedom in the United States. Just south of them were settlements in New York, New Jersey, and Delaware, to which all of the large influx of settlers who were migrating from Europe brought their variety of faiths with them. The religious diversity by immigration set the tone, being the most pluralistic areas of the New World. We know the state of Pennsylvania. William Penn, who emigrated from England to America, was a Quaker and had owned land, and he made this pluralism a matter of principle on his private land, and opened his woods. Sylvania means woodland or beautiful woodland, so he had Sylvania, which William Penn's beautiful woodland, is the origin of the study. And he opened it up to settlements for all religious people, any particular denomination, he did not care, who were fleeing Europe to come to America to be free. A variety of different branches of the Quakers came. Anabaptist groups, Moravians, Jews, Catholics, Presbyterians, and early Baptists. So what are we seeing here is people really struggling for freedom to worship as they wanted by themselves. And then we have a movement called Methodism, which arose in the United States. It began in England, but its name, Methodism, came from the Greek word methodos, which means knowledge. So we have the right knowledge, and it is in the pursuit of knowledge we are going to pursue freedom of religion. And it was a movement of Protestant Christians who came to the New World via a gentleman called George Whitefield, who came from England in the mid-1700s. It was the beginning, actually, of the evangelical movement, as we know it today in America. And the Enlightenment, which it was termed, was based on the rational thought and freedom of conscience, freedom to choose one's own religious destiny, all erupted in a huge religious revival in the 1740s here. It was also known as the First Great Awakening. America wasn't a very religious group of people at the time, and in fact the Founding Fathers wondered whether or not they could live under the Constitution that they were proposing because of a lack of godliness. And so the Black Brigade of ministers went around preaching around the country, encouraging people to be more and more religious and godly people, because the Constitution would not work without godly principles. And so we have the Great Awakening, the time period in which the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and all of those things came together. And as a result of that, we have George Whitefield, who began preaching, of all things, the Born Again concept. It goes back quite a long way, does it not? At the same time, Thomas Jefferson supported the Baptists against the restrictive taxation of the Anglican Church, 3 p.m. And after the Civil War, 1861 through 65, a socially engaged form of Protestantism emerged. Now, what we mean by that is we're going to help people in their daily lives. This is our main thrust. This is what we should do. And Unitarian, Dorothy, Dix's crusade on behalf of the mentally ill, for example, started up in Presbyterian reformer Jane Addams Hull. Had a house in Chicago for women. Mary Baker Eddy's Christian Scientist, or Church of Christ Scientist, was founded at the same time. And the rise of evolution and Charles Darwin hit the scene, and a great debate over origin of the species took place. Very shortly after that, Pentecostalism began to grow up. And it began in various places, but it mostly came in 1906 to its forefront in, of all places, Los Angeles, and it was ignited by an African-American preacher called William Seymour. And this was where people showed their freedom of the spirit, where they could allow freedom of expression, open prayers, speaking in tongues, and things like this. And of course, it became a very big movement. In fact, my mother was part of that, Force Bear Gospel, which in England at the time, in the start of 1945, 46, 47, right about there. The famous evangelist, Amy Simple McPherson. Anyone seen the movie Elmer Gantry? Elmer Gantry? A classical movie that shows the movement of the tent, where people would go around and they would travel to an area and they'd put up a tent and they'd have a, it was played by Elmer Gantry, who was played by Burt Lancaster, by the way, that had this tent been into revivals and people were indeed encouraged to give their hearts to the Lord and be born again of whatever variety of religion was pushing. And in the 20th century, the Young Men's Christian Association, the Young Women's Christian Association, Bible conferences sprang up, and those came under the banner of non-denominational. I just described myself a couple of days to someone as a non-denominational person, and I think I've changed my mind a little bit. We really are non-denominational in that sense. We're the church. We are the church of the privilege of the church of God. We are quite denominational. But understanding, we can use that term to put ourselves in a certain way. Sunday school networks came up. Christian periodicals were done, Christian radio programs began in the 1920s and 30s, and onto the air came one Herbert W. Armstrong, K-O-R-E, in Eugene, Oregon, who rode the crest wave of news by radio. He had a very good voice, dynamic speaker, and we know it was in the story. The Worldwide Church, the Radio Church of God, which is the organization I came into, practiced 3MP very, very clearly. And the Worldwide Church of God continued in on that. It changed its name from Radio Church of God because we became worldwide. So, at the same time, Billy Graham was on the scene. Billy Graham, no doubt, inspired Martin Luther King and I Have a Dream and his desire for freedom, and the social gospel movements were alive and well. If I may quote the article, America was, and I'm going to put my square brackets, is now a spiritual marketplace, a giant buffet where believers choose what religion they want to try for the day. Is soup du jour. What do you want out of your religion? What is it you expect from your church? America has become one of the most religiously diverse and confusing nations in the world. And of all countries, this one that has the ideal of freedom of religion, in a certain way has become captivated by all those movements which I mentioned right from the very beginning of the invasion of the conquistadores and right up until today. Now, why? Why? Why did I give this historic view? I gave this historic view because it teaches us a huge lesson about religion as we know it today. That huge lesson will be revealed in just a moment. First of all, let me talk about an attitude. An attitude is we should not be too critical of the past, because that was the best that people could do at the time, according to their understanding. Okay? We shouldn't be too critical of the past. I really feel irked when people start attacking Mr. Armstrong. I feel it's unnecessary. Did he do some things wrong? Well, if you want to look back on it, that's easy, it's unless he did. If you were in his shoes at the day and at the time, would you have done as well as he did in doing what he believed? The answer would be absolutely not. Certainly not for me. So, to go back and Monday morning quarterback, to go back and criticise those of the past, which I'm not doing, for any group or organisation, is not profitable and beneficial. We need to leave that alone. Secondly, the main point, is movements give opportunity to demonstrate who and what you are. Are you in the vein of God? Are you free in which? What are you? When we see the rise and fall of these personalities time after time after time after time after time, we will see 3MP very fully in the picture. What is 3MP? can conceptualize this phrase. It means power, prestige, position, and money. Power, prestige, position, and money. 3MP. And when you look at the broad panorama of religion in the historic area of the United States, England, if you will, as well, Europe, if you will, we have Catholic domination from 476 AD until the Protestant Reformation in the 1500s, when we had Martin Luther, Zwingli, Calvin, Knox, all struggling to reform Catholicism, which held an iron grip, power, prestige, position, and money over all people. So they broke free from that at the price of hundreds of thousands of people who were slaughtered in various uprisings in Europe to get free from the power and control of Catholicism. And then we have Calvin and Luther and Zwingli and Knox and King James the Sixth of Scotland, who became King James the First of England. It was ACDC, by the way. Rule and control the nation, Queen Elizabeth, Henry VIII, all using power, prestige, position, and money to have their form of religion, their form of government, their form of doctrine over people. Interesting, isn't it? The classic case of control, people, and knowledge. Now, it's true that about the time of the Radio Church of God, the Worldwide Church of God, and the United Church of God, and many others, have also represented power, prestige, position, and money. It's been in my time in the church, I say tongue-in-cheek and somewhat facetiously, I went to a boarding school at 13, which run like a military. And then I went into the military and had 6 years of military. And then I came out and went to Ambassador College, and it was worse than the military, or my boarding school. And you might say, well, why? Power, position, prestige, and money. I didn't have any money. I certainly had no power, prestige, or position, except power over myself. But I thought it was right to submit to what was quite a dictatorial, controlling group and organization. And people on the outside were looking on us and say, you're a cult. Mr. Armstrong's controlling. He was. And so were many of those underneath him. And I don't believe maybe Mr. Armstrong quite realized that those underneath him were as controlling as they were. And we had this mindset, which when I went out into the field learned that in England, that you weren't really free to talk. You had to sit there in silence. You couldn't contribute to the conversation. And I remember one day the person that was a quote lead man was sitting on there in the cars. You know, you could grab the engine, keep the engine ready, press the clutch pedal, and spin it on the clutch pedal and just keep those revs up so when it changes, then you can take off. Well, that's fine, but, you know, being the mechanic I am, I know that when you do that, this thrust bearing, as it calls, wears out very quickly. So I made a comment, saying, you know what, you know, when you're sitting on a hill riding the thrust bearing and revving the engine and holding it there, and I said, Richard, you know, when you do that, you kind of wear out the thrust bearing. Didn't say anything. Was reported to a senior man, Charles, me, and I got told off because I was criticizing the leader. Okay, we'll leave that one there. But that was the sort of mentality it was, very controlling in many, many ways. Now, I believe that we do understand the teachings, the fundamental teachings of God, which are not that way. They're not that way. But like all others in business and religion, 3PM existed and may still exist. exist in some. And when 3PM exists the way it does, the brethren are the ones that suffer, not the people in opposition. Now I know that God calls. I know that God called me, because almost 50 years later, I'm still convinced and convicted about my own life. And I've learned lessons along the road of life of how both to do it and how both not to do it. I think united at this period of time would agree that individually we are responsible to God for our attitudes, our heart, our behavior, our beliefs, and our commitment. And the only time that any sort of persuasion may come up in the congregation is when someone does something, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and 6, where it is obviously blatantly an affront to the congregation. We can have our personal beliefs, we can have our approaches, and so long as we don't impose them on others, we're free to associate lovingly in an open environment here. And of all times, at this time in the Church of God, I think it's the best, happiest, nicest, freest time that we've ever had in the Church of God. I am thrilled where we are today. Because 3 PM, for the most vast majority, has disappeared. The question of how we are united is the key, and whether or not we are applying the current paradigm well in our association with each other. The only way we can truly be united is by applying the right principles of God in our lives and resisting 3 PM. Now, this is a short sermon. I'm only going to read one passage of scripture. So if we turn over to Matthew 23, I think we will see what I mean by 3 PM. Matthew chapter 23. It was interesting, one of the people that came to the Kingdom of God seminar after he spoke to me said, well, you know, I don't want to be part of a church that tells you, is controlling and tells you everything what you've got to do. And I said, I couldn't agree more. I don't know why. And the second thing he said was, well, I don't want a church to have all of its doctrines now doubts, but you've got to believe everything they believe. I said, I don't believe more. Nor do I. I'm sure there are people in here, in fact, I know there are people in here that hold different positions on different things. I do. Am I going to talk about them publicly? No. Why not? Don't need to. Don't need to. If I want to bring about change and I want to do something about that, I can sit down and I can write and type it up and describe my process of reasoning and thinking and scriptural applications, and we now have a doctrinal committee back in force again, thank you Scott, and perhaps now that when an article is sent in, like I sent in one, it's saddled someone's desk for 2 whole years unread, and then nothing happened after that because it was a biased group of people, didn't want to look at that particular piece of information, and reject it. Warning. Warning. If it's not right scripturally, fine. Not accepted. But just to hold it back, because it doesn't fit their paradigm of power and control, is not good. So we are now in a place where we can see things a little more clearly. Let's have a look at Matthew 23. Matthew 23 and the first 13 verses, to me, describes very, very clearly 3 PM. Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. There was some discussion about this on the research I did on the background, about whether or not they had a square stone that they sat on in front of the congregation, and so forth, or was it the Sanhedrin, etc. Since it's speculation and discussion, we'll leave it there. However, the scribes and the Pharisees had a certain amount of influence and authority, let us say. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe, but do not do according to their works, for they say not. Perhaps in their society, with the development from both oral law and the Talmud and following the Mishnah and so forth, they developed certain positions. We're okay, you can do them. Okay? If the culture agreed on that, that was fine. But they themselves were not doing these things. They were telling people to do things, but they were not following those things by their words. This is what we call hypocrisy. Have we had hypocrisy in the ministry? Have we had hypocrisy in administrations? Have we had hypocrisy in the field? Of course. Human beings have problems. We have difficulties. We have to overcome. And that's where forgiveness and understanding come in. Here we have leadership with great hypocrisy. For they bind heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Now that's not very fair, is it? You expect them, the congregation people, to do certain things that you really, in your life, are not willing to do yourself. It doesn't apply to you. You're above this. Why? You've got the power. You've got the influence. You've got the control. You can make these decisions. So, you know, do bad for the person that's got to do it. You don't care. For thy bind heavy burdens, but he won't help you. Verse 5. But all their works they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge according to their gardens. So power, position, now we have prestige. They want recognition. They want to be known. They want to be seen. They want to be looked up to. They want to be respected. They have their formal dress. They have their particular speaking style. They have their huge organizations. They go around in bulletproof, see-through vehicles with hats on their heads and caps. That's a prestige. They love the best seats at the feasts and the best seats in the synagogue. And as I was recalling to Fred Mark, you know, back in Australia many years ago, there was a gentleman who's now dead who owned a catering company. And one day he came in and set up a table and cloth and napkins and silver knives and spoons and all the rest of it just for the ministry. And the minister said, "We don't need this. Don't, please don't do this. It's not necessary. Please don't do it. We'll just take what we bring ourselves. There's no need to be special just for the ministry. Everybody is equal." Highly respect the man for it, and we didn't do that again. Why is that necessary? Same story was reiterated by Mark when he went down to Mexico and they had a potluck and they sat down and all ate together. Whereas in previous times, too long ago, they had a platform and table set up in the city street later on. Didn't fellowship in the prayer. Position, prestige, power. Why not? Why not? If they're God's people. Well, recognition for some people is a very important thing because really they are themselves inferior in many ways. They love greetings in the marketplace and can be called by man, teacher, teacher, or guide, guide. But you do not be called rabbi or teacher, for one is your teacher or your rabbi, that is the Messiah. I don't like the word Christ very much. Messiah. But you are all brethren, brothers and sisters in Christ. And as Mr. Lloyd Holliday said, me one day, he said, "Well, there is no rank in the ministry, we've all been squashed flat." And I said, "Good." Good. Why? Well, the ministry is supposed to be servants. We're here to serve. We're not here to dominate. 3PC. Okay? 3PM, the third is the PM is money. And the M, the equation. Money and power do things. Interesting if we said to everyone in the ministry, "Okay, we can't afford to pay you. Now you're going to have to go on half pay and go out and get a job and see what would happen." What would happen if that took place? what would they do? I know already what I do, I'm going to brag, but I did that. Well, no, I didn't. I took no money. I just resigned. But I served the three churches down in South Texas, Lattice, for 10 years. Are we willing to really be humble and serve God's people to whatever degree we can, wherever we can, to the best ability we can? Are we? Are we willing to serve each other in that way, not expecting anything? We're brethren. That is a very powerful word, Adolphus, isn't it? We get the word Philadelphia from Adolphus, the city of brotherly love. Let's go on in verse 9. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father who is in heaven. Do not be called teacher, for one is your teacher, the Messiah is. Why is the Messiah our teacher? Because the Messiah set the example of sacrifice and giving up 3 p.m. to become God incarnate. How much more can you give up than he gave up and sacrificed his life for us? But he who is the greatest among you shall be your servant, and whoever exalts himself will be abased, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, who want power, want position, want prestige, want money. Verse 14, you want to see the money in a minute. For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. So Jesus places a choice before the people. You can follow the scribes, or the soup du jour of the day of religious diversity in the United States, or wherever you are, or you follow me. I want you to understand my attitude. I'm not condemning people who are in other religious groups. God call them when their time comes. Fine. I'm happy. However, when it comes to us that God has called and given his knowledge and understanding to, and we then need to make sure 3 p.m. position, power, prestige and money do not influence what we do. That we are motivated by the service mentality alone. If we follow the scribes, etc., well, they receive their condemnation. In some cases, their teachings may be correct. Even if they are correct, if 3 p.m. is their motivation, they're still wrong. So, whenever we are faced up with a situation to look for 3 p.m. or we see it in work, focus on the reception. We're brethren. We have equal responsibilities within our congregation in that sense. If we grow in that area, that is the area that's most important to grow in. You know, it's been very interesting to me, the small response we've had to the Kingdom of God Sacrament. That's fine. We may not grow large in numbers. That might be a blessing. Look what happened when we were 150,000. Mr. Armstrong died, and suddenly, all of a sudden, 120,000 people disappeared somewhere. Brethren of the Church of God splintered off into who knows how many different groups. Just recently we understood that it's still happening. The rise and fall of the historic examples are happening. If we are guided by the paradigm of humility, submission, servanthood, and commitment to our way of life, where we are, our examples, the way we deal with people, is not along a military paradigm, but not along a controlling paradigm, but seeing how we may help and serve and do as God's word in our personal lives, which is what our Father is looking for. So remember, avoid three.